to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Because, like, even now...
Oh, wait a minute. I haven't done my intro. Stop.
What?
So,
what?
Are we
good morning. This is Buck Benny.
Rather than talking about it...
I'm joined with my friend Jim and my friend Bob, who will not stop interrupting me for an intro. But anyway, we are here for talking about Discovery episode... 8 or something like that, 9, yeah. Who knows? It'll say in the title, I'll get that right. But anyway, this is the one that happens after last week we had the big Talos 4 episode. Now we have Spock who, no, we didn't have, no, it wasn't last week. We had the Arium episode last week, that's right. And so this is, Spock is making sense now, Arium's gone, control is a big issue, Section 31 is becoming a big thing. So there's a lot going on here. And in this particular episode, they've all kind of figured out a way to capture the Red Angel, and they have to attract the Red Angel first. And so the way that they decide to attract the Red Angel is they think the only way to do it is Burnham has to stay alive. Burnham can't die for everything to happen. So they said, well, if we try our best to kill off Burnham, eventually the Red Angel will show up, which to me is a plan that I really can't see them all agreeing to, but they did. So,
but they were kind of agreeing that they were going to almost like pretend to kill her. You know, it's like, okay, we'll make it look like we're going to kill her, but we're going to come in at the last minute and save her. And it's like, well, that doesn't work because you're not going to kill her.
Exactly. And the Red Angel would know that you have to be committed to actually kill her. And that's where Spock takes over and like is not going to bend on trying to save her at the last minute, because he knows it won't work if they save her at the last minute.
Yeah.
So it's got to be where either the Red Angel saves her or she dies. And the rest of course, Pike and his crew can't accept that worth beans. But obviously, the Red Angel is not going to come swoop in to save somebody that they're going to save themselves, right? And so they have to actually let her die if they're going to do this. And Spock's the only one apparently that can realize that, though I would think a lot of them should kind of realize this isn't going to work. Bob, what did you think?
Well, he was looking at it logically, and yes, they were looking at it emotionally. We can't let her die. And he's like, logically, we've got to let her die.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
well, he's like, you know, I would be like, well, then why even try this? Because it's not going to, you know.
Yeah.
But I guess you go, well, let's just see if it attracts. But obviously, towards the end there, it didn't, wasn't attracting the Red Angel, because obviously they weren't going to kill her until Spock took over and pushed it beyond. I thought it was interesting how Spock was refusing a direct order from Pike. That is not something that you normally would see Spock do, though we have seen him do it on occasion in all the series and all the movies that he's been on when push comes to shove. Bob, what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah, it was interesting. My favorite, I think, line from it was when Spock says, I'll be guilty of killing a Star Trek officer for the second time. So it would be, was it advantageous that you live?
Well, did he say guilty, or he'd be charged with killing Starfleet for a second time? I think it was going to be charged.
Probably charged with, yeah.
Because the first time it was the holograms, but...
His response was, or her response was, always, you know, great with words, Spock, like he's totally dry about it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it wasn't like, it was like, well, I don't want you to die. It's like, well, can you not, it'd be best if you didn't die because I don't want to get charged again.
So yeah, it was interesting. I'm surprised I could actually capture the Red Angel, given its technology is much more advanced, but apparently it worked.
Yeah. What do you think about Bob coming, because you're fresh to this? I mean, what do you think about this version of Spock? Are you liking him? I don't know.
I didn't like him at first. I think two episodes ago I didn't like him. Now I'm warming up to him. He's kind of like the really dry Spock that you would see.
Well, he's more like Spock. Right? Yeah. I mean, he's more like Spock. It's like the previous episodes, his emotions were completely out of control and everything else. And this episode, he's kind of back to a normal Spock where his emotions are more in control and he's thinking more logically and stuff like that. So before it was like, he was a Vulcan that was going nuts. He wasn't Spock.
Well, even back a few episodes when he was going nuts, he still was, I don't know. I didn't really like the character that well. He was still being pretty dry, but he kind of grows on you because he just kind of stays there.
Yeah. And he's got maybe a better written sense of humor than other Spocks have had or something. Cause yeah, he's got this dry wit that he uses that is really quite funny the way he says things.
But it's almost as if, like the writers are trying to not intentionally make him funny, but he's funny because he's just so dry about it.
Yes.
It's sort of endearing and weird, kind of like our good friend Mr. Sean. There's some that are endearing. it's kind of seems like the same thing. He's not really, I don't know if they're writing to be funny, or they're writing to be funny, but he's funny because he's just the way he brings it across, the way he executes it.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Yeah, I think the acting's great and the writing's really cool for him that they do. And he walks that line of you're going, okay, he's funny, but is he purposely, the character, is Spock purposely saying this to be funny, or is he just so out of touch with what he's saying and the way he's saying it that it even makes it funnier in some ways because of what he's saying? Because some things he'll say and you're like, okay, you're saying, well, this is important, but it's because I'm self-centered that I don't want to be charged again or whatever. And it's just funny how the turn of phrase he uses for things. Jim, what are your thoughts? I mean, we haven't heard much of your thoughts on Spock, though you've experienced him throughout the whole, you know, the rest of the season and stuff. But what have you thought about this version of Spock versus the other versions that we've seen of Spock?
I think this is a good one. Now that they're kind of having him be more Spock, like I was saying, you know, before, you know, he's up until this point, he's just been this deranged, you know, person that even for a human has lost control of their emotions and stuff like that. And so it didn't really seem like Spock to me. And so this episode now they've reined him in. He's got control again, and he's more like Spock.
Right.
I'm looking forward to the other series and stuff where we get to see more, you know, of him and everything else that's going on. So I think it's going to be good.
I think at this point in time, I was thinking to myself about his beard and things, and I was going, you know, if you kept him around for years, even he could theoretically have his beard for the next 7 years of episodes or whatever, because this is a time frame where we've never seen him, right? Spock, there's no reference to this Spock at this point in time. And so I'm like, oh yeah, his look could totally change as long as, you know, right before Kirk takes over the ship or something, he decides, oh, I think I'll shave my beard. I just thought, yeah, you can have a very
well. They did that
Spock if you wanted to.
They did that at some point. Wasn't there? Wasn't it a?
Yeah, the Mirror Universe Spock had a beard. Yeah,
that's well. No, I mean, I know that. That's why I always think it's like in the Mirror Universe because he has the beard is supposed to somehow signify he's evil or something.
Yeah,
but but
which could be, we don't know yet.
But what wasn't there a preview of the new Star Trek show they're working on, or maybe a short take?
Yeah,
where he winds up having shaved. I can't remember where exactly I saw that. But
well, we're not supposed to be talking about the future now. We're living in this episode. We don't know who's seen the future or not seen the future. I happen to know the future. We learned in our WandaVision that I have mind control, but I also have future vision. So there we go. And if you happen to see the ads during the Super Bowl this weekend, and you notice that Spock doesn't have a beard, who knows? Maybe he'll have a beard in the show. Maybe he won't. I don't know. I do think this weekend, when during the Super Bowl, because this is filmed the day before the Super Bowl, that more people are going to be exposed to the current version of Spock and to Pike than have ever been exposed to that at all. Because, I mean, and it's going to be interesting. Do they explain at all what's going on, that they're from a series or anything or not? Because they're, I think I talked about it last week with you guys. They are, it looks like it's going to be a series of commercials where they're going on some sort of adventure with James Corden. I think it's Corden, that's the late night host. And it's all about CBS All Access changing to become Paramount Plus, right?
Yeah, they're climbing a mountain or something or another.
We see them climbing a mountain at the beginning of that. I'm just assuming that's not the only ad. I'm assuming that there's going to be multiple ads because they've put this strange group of people together. There's Snooki from Jersey Shores or whatever new series she's on. And there's a strange group of characters, and two of them happen to be Pike and Spock. So,
yeah, because if they just have them on the show, on the commercial, and they don't really talk about it, you know, are people going to be like, it's like, oh, there's a new Star Trek show, and oh, you know, I want to go and look at that, or
right.
You know, I imagine probably Star Trek.
Probably going to be looking at Pike and going, is he the new Kirk or what? They're probably not going to understand Pike unless they say something,
yeah,
or refer to him by name in some way. Corden goes, "Well, Pike, come over here and help me with this." Or I don't know. I mean, it'll be.
I bet probably any Star Trek fan is probably aware of that show that they're coming out with for them, and, you know, Discovery and everything else. They're probably already aware of those things. And I don't know that if you had a non-Star Trek fan, you know, if they saw another Spock and another person like that, and, you know, they might be able to recognize it's from a Star Trek show or something, but I don't think it's going to make them say, oh, well, I want to sign up for, you know, Paramount.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Whatever, you know, so
to make it enticing to sign up. So they need to somehow introduce them or something if they're trying to gain a bigger audience.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right. Or play it like, okay, we're going to reach out to fans that aren't even Star Trek fans at all, that are just people that might be, you know, and go, oh, I hear you have a new science fiction. I don't know. It could be like the bad preview. Remember the Saturday morning preview shows that would be like Friday night before, and they'd say, oh, Scooby, you have a new show coming out, don't you? And Scooby-Doo would be like, right, I have a new, you know, then they describe whatever the show was going to be. We travel around in a balloon and do mysteries and whatever it was going to be for that season. Who knows? I think I'm more excited about the commercials this time but sometime with certain Super Bowls. This Super Bowl, I think I'm more excited about seeing what's going to happen with this set of commercials than I am about the actual Super Bowl. We'll see. So, Jim, who are you rooting for in the Super Bowl, or do you care?
I am rooting for the Falcons.
Okay. I think you've got a good chance there. Not. I don't know. It would be interesting to see Tom Brady win for a different team.
He plays for the Falcons, right?
Yeah. He used to be on Denver, and then he left there.
Okay. He's a wide receiver, right?
See, this is our techno talk of the nerds trying to get a handle on football, but actually we know it better than we're saying. But I think it would be interesting to watch Tom Brady really cement that he's the greatest of all time in the
By going to another team.
And the very first year he goes there, taking them and winning the Super Bowl. I mean, Matt, who's not here, is a bigger football fan than probably all of us put together. But he was like, it really doesn't matter. If he doesn't win, he's still the greatest of all time. He took a second team to the Super Bowl, whether he wins or not. And he's won, I think, 6 times for the Patriots. Yeah. So it's just, I mean, it's almost impossible at this point to argue anything else. Truly, if he won the game, it would be completely impossible to argue.
There's always the question.
And no one would ever, I can't imagine anyone ever matching that. Maybe sometime 100 years from now, someone will match that.
Well, this is what, Super Bowl number 11, I think, for him with 6 wins?
I think so, yes. 6 wins, the 11th time there, yeah.
It was always question, was it Belichick or was it Brady? Who is the architect of it? Now it's starting to look like Brady because, of course, he brought Gronk with him too. So
right. Because Gronk had retired, I believe, entirely. And yeah. I don't know if it was Brady talking to Gronk and going, hey, I'm on this new team. Can you come join us? Would you consider it would be really interesting to see how that happened. Or if in conversations Brady already had Gronk in his back pocket and was like, hey, if you guys take me for this amount of money, Gronk is going to come with me.
I'm actually surprised that Gronkowski could actually play though. Cause I remember there was some talk because during the year that he retired, he was involved in some marijuana
something
store or company, something or another, doing promotions for them and doing all this other kind of stuff. And so there was questions as to whether or not that would run afoul of their drug policies and
that
would wind up with
this kind of suspension. Just last year, or was it 2 years ago he retired? Do you know? Did he retire last year, or was it like the year before that?
The year before that, he took a whole year off.
Okay. Yeah, because I would think they wouldn't have a problem in that almost any kind of penalty they do is usually less. I haven't seen them get rid of like a player for an entire year. Usually it's a few games they have to sit out or something. So I think the NFL would look at it as any punishment we would have given him for the whatever he was doing with marijuana or whatever would have already given him an expired. So he took a year off.
They don't count it that way. I mean, if they would have been the same way they were with other suspensions for other players, it's like even if because there's several players where they have had a suspension hanging over their head and they're not playing for a year and then they come back and then they apply the suspension there.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, NFL's shown us over and over and over again that it depends on what player you are. If you're a key player, that's they're going to treat you differently than if you're a lineman on some team or something, right? Mm-hmm. So Gronk, I'm sure, got special dispensation to do what they wanted him to do, which shouldn't be the case, but I think it is. Anyway, this ties into Star Trek really well.
So this was a good episode though, in that they figured out who the Red Angel is, and they're going to capture the Red Angel. And then, I mean, I'm not sure if we're giving away spoilers here or not, you know. But then there's a twist at the end there that, you know, not maybe who they think that it is. So
I have another thing that's episode specific here. That's your daughter in the background in the hammock, I assume?
It is. That was our vacation over on Hainan Island in China, off the south end of China.
Well, my question is, I've been looking for my hammock. I thought it was in my garage. Did you take it to China with you? Is that what happened there? Because that is my hammock, I can tell.
It's still hanging between those trees. And the next year, it was still there. So, yeah.
Jim is a member of Section 31.
I'll grab it for you next time I can actually.
Because I could describe by him. It has white ropes and it has a wooden part that goes across the ropes. And I'd say that's pretty much the description of that one. So
you sound like my mother. My mother always, whenever she sees something in mine or my brother's house that is something that she also has, she sees it and it's like, that must be mine because I haven't seen mine for a while. Did you take mine? And it's like, yeah. No, they sell them in the store and people, you know, other people buy them just because it looks like yours doesn't make it yours.
Yes. No, if I was going to sound like your mother, I'd be more like, Jamie, what did you do? Hammock. Why did you take my hammock, Jamie?
That's one of the worst English accents I think I've ever heard. It's a good thing you commentate and you don't actually act in these shows.
At least not as an
English person. Does she still call you Jamie or does she call you Jim now?
No, she half and half.
Okay. Because for years, I was going by Jim and she was calling you Jamie, and I thought it was funny.
I think she calls him James, too. James!
Oh, yeah, James.
Mine's Honey Bear, sorry.
That's a far better impression than I had, Bob. Nice job. I think we should all talk like Jim's mom for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, okay.
Bob, any last thoughts on this episode, or...
Yeah, I think it left out the fact. I really liked it when she like punched out Leland.
Oh yeah,
It gave a lot of backstory and it filled in a lot of holes. I mean, this was like the first one where okay, now
wait. Did she punch out Leland in this episode or next episode?
This one, yeah.
Are you sure? Okay. Because I watched both of them and I was like, wasn't that next one? I don't know.
Well, she might have done it in the next one too, but. Yeah, she definitely did in this one.
Well, I guess before we leave, we'll give the huge spoiler away because you've all supposedly watched the episode, and this is your fault if you're listening to this. At the very end of the episode, the whole episode, they think that essentially it's Burnham, right? They find out it's going to be Burnham is going to be the Red Angel. And we're like, oh, okay, it's going to be Burnham. I watched it actually last night with Matt, and it was his first time seeing it. And you could tell... When they started having the Emperor on the episode, I could just see it in his mind and I knew what he was thinking. He's like, oh, maybe it's Burnham from the other universe, from the mirror universe is going to be the Red Angel, you know? And so I just let him think that and we go on and I knew at the end. And then at the end, he's like, oh my goodness. He didn't know, of course. No one who would have ever thought she was going to be who she was. Bob is still questioning a little bit who she is. So I said we would explain it to him a little bit. She comes on, of course, at the very end, brings Burnham back from death. Burnham looks at her and says, Mom. And so that's kind of the end of the episode. So, yes, we're going to, of course, find out that it is Burnham's mother. Next episode, they'll explain all the background of how this all happened. We'll get like the whole Sixth Sense thing where they go back through and show us how Mom connected to the various things and why she was doing what she's doing, why she abandoned Burnham, the whole thing. And so that'll be really interesting. Bob,
go ahead. It actually kind of bugged me because even now you can tell from DNA it's a mother or the actual person. So I'm like, they shouldn't have got that wrong. But
yeah. Well, especially they shouldn't have given the doctor the line. They gave the doctor the line of, and the way he played it was, you know, he really sold it in that they said, well, could this be some sort of manipulation? Could this be other things? And the doctor's like, no, this is her DNA. I would have seen a manipulation. I would have found that, like, that is so beneath me. I'm so good at doing this. I couldn't possibly make a mistake. And then, of course, we find out it's her mom. And then he comes up next episode. I mean, I'm not going to give much away at all, but he's going to do the argument of, well, you know, a mother's DNA and a daughter's DNA are very similar. And often a daughter can be almost an exact copy of the whatever. It's like, yeah, that's going against totally. I mean, I suppose he could have said, was there some sort of manipulation? Oh, no, I'd catch any kind of manipulation. I mean, unless it was some sort of family-related thing. But other than that, I'd catch everything.
they explain it later on when they, you know, they tell you that Burnham is actually a clone of her mother and stuff. So, you know, so we...
Jim sharing more of his alternate reality. So there
you go. Oh, that was a spoiler?
That's in WandaVision episode 6 that we figure that out about.
It was done really subtly. So you really have to watch all of these next episodes to pick up on it. But it was really subtle, but it was there.
Well, and I hear they're going to explain that during the Super Bowl commercials. So hopefully you catch on.
They didn't. And the nice thing is, yet they didn't bring in an old NTSC piece of test equipment.
See, that's all good. You got to look on the bright side. But no, I would say a solid episode overall. I would, you know, and I'm okay that they made it be her mother and things. I guess I will tell you two now, and I will tell our audience now that, well, and Jim already knows this, but I think what we should do after we're done with season 2 of Discovery, that we should go and spend at least get through like half the season, probably just do the whole season of Picard before we do Discovery season 3, because there is a piece, and Jim knows what I'm talking about, of Picard that ties into season 3 of Discovery. And I think would give you more enjoyment of that episode. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jim?
No.
Okay. Have you watched Picard?
Yes.
You have. Okay. So there is an episode of Picard that ties into an episode of season 3 of Discovery. That also ties in somewhat. Well, I won't say the rest. I'll leave the rest there. But
I remember they were talking in Discovery season 3. They were talking about some stuff that happened to some places and stuff that was also kind of covered somewhat in Picard. Yeah.
Right. Well, there's also some a group of characters that we had not seen before that were introduced in Picard, but that showed up on.
Oh, yeah.
I think without that, you miss a little bit. So I think we should do that with Bob. And I think Bob would enjoy Picard anyway. I mean, Bob, you were a Next Gen fan, weren't you? And I watched Next Gen. Yeah. Picard is a nice little callback to Next Gen, sort of in a, I don't know, a movie sort of way. I mean, I would. Let's talk Picard for just a minute since we got time anyway. Jim, you've watched the Next Gen movies, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, including Nemesis?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know if I remember all of them.
But to my mind, to my way of thinking, I really enjoyed Picard. I've enjoyed it more than I thought I would and more than most fans probably did anyway. So I would say, you know, the first couple movies were pretty good. Certainly the Borg movie and things, First Contact, was really good. Generations I thought was kind of interesting with combining the two, Captain Kirk and Picard and all that. But after that, I think there was two. Yeah, there was only two more movies. Those last two, especially Nemesis, didn't do that much for me. In fact, Nemesis, the way they treated the Brent Spiner's character of Data, I didn't like that at all, what they've done there. And Picard kind of, one, tries to fix some of that. Two, I think is just a better story than those last couple movies. What do you think? Did you find it?
I was never a big fan of the Next Gen movies.
Okay.
You know, maybe it was because, you know, they got those movies coming out and there were still TV shows at the time, you know, Star Trek TV shows that were kind of in the same genre and time frame and stuff that was going on. And you know, we'd just seen the whole series of Next Gen for many years and things like that. With the original series, you know, that was done a long, long time ago, and then you had all the movies from them. So it wasn't like it was just a continuation of the series, because, you know, it'd been so long since the series had come out.
I like how you captured that. It looks like he's actually on the hammock, on my hammock, I must say, get out of my yard, Jim. Get off my grass.
No, but so, you know, I usually don't like movies that are just a continuation of a series that I've been watching. You know, I kind of feel like it's like, well, you know, just make it a series or a TV right. show or something like that. Don't make it a...
Which they finally did for you. Yeah. And Picard. They made it into a series. So there you go. You got what you wanted. So, but what did you think of the Picard series overall? Did you, without giving anything away, I mean, did you enjoy it? Did you...
It was interesting. It could be slow at times, I think.
Yes.
You know, so there were times when it was kind of slow and I wanted, you know, to start seeing something happen and get some action and some things going. It definitely built and was better, I think, probably the second half of the season than it was the first half of the season.
Yes. Yes. I would say I enjoyed the first two episodes. Then they were okay for a while. And then I really enjoyed the episode that showed some of the characters from Next Generation. We won't go into who those were, but that was enjoyable. And then, like you say, the end, it had a nice, good ending. I mean, so far, every series they've done of Star Trek, really including Lower Decks, the last three or four episodes are always like really, really good. They do a great job of finishing things out. And so... which I think is probably the most important thing for these limited series to have a great end. It's just, I wish that in the middle sometimes that they would think about it and make some better stories or make a mid-season arc that you hit and then an end season arc or something instead of this long arc, because by definition, an arc is going to have this middle sag and you don't want to have that middle sag so much, but anyway.
Well, the arc could go the other way too. So the beginning be horrible and the middle be great and then it ends horribly.
Yes. Which would be
probably gonna lose a lot of your fans.
Yes. That would
they won't stick with you when it's horrible to begin with, and they won't stick with you when the last half when it gets horrible. You know?
Or as we talked last week, the U with a smaller end than the beginning, which is really a J.
Well, that's what you were describing. He's like, oh, it's a U, but the front is smaller, shorter than the front. Well, that makes it a J.
That makes it a J. And I talked to your mom after that about that, and she said, oh, that's a J. That's just like in Jamie's name. Yes, he's not a J. And I'm like, yes, that's true. That's true.
You just lost like six viewers right there because of that. No, I can't take it anymore. No more of the...
Oh, they love me. Anyway, off we go. I could just do my Mrs. Doubtfire impression, which is, oh, it's lovely. It's lovely.
Sounds just like my mother.
I pretty much do Miss Doubtfire for any woman that I do. Well, we will be off with us. Enjoy this episode of Discovery if you're going to watch it, and we'll be back next week. I do want to say again, I'm enjoying how many people are tuning in to WandaVision, our talks on WandaVision. Oh, this is my cat. Our talks on WandaVision and our talks on Star Trek. Because you would think that they wouldn't get that many viewers, but a lot of folks love our conversation. So thank you. We try and be as entertaining as we can and as straight to the point as we can, never veering off in any way. So I'll see you guys next week. Bye now.
Hello, Disco fans. Welcome to The Ready Room, our weekly discussion about all things Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Naomi Kyle, and today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 10, with Michael Burnham herself, Sonequa Martin-Green. Very excited for this episode. Now, we will be getting deep into some spoilers, so if you haven't watched Episode 10, do it right now, then come right back, because we're going to be going super deep into this.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited, too, and I'm so excited to finally be interviewing you.
I am so happy to be interviewed by you.
Oh,
this is
going
to be a good time. I'm happy to be here, Naomi.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining like the Ready Room, and of course. You know, you play such an integral role in this show, and just to be interviewing Michael Burnham is such an honor. But let's talk about this episode. It kind of kicks off on a somber note. Mm-hmm. You know, Arium's funeral.
Right.
It's a difficult moment. It's a beautiful scene too. Mm-hmm. But I do want to touch on that very dramatic scene between you two in episode 9.
Yes.
Where we just, you know, we get a sense that you guys have this really immense bond, and there's a lot of sadness. I would say, you know, from you as a, from your perspective, what was it like working with Hannah and, of course, having to be a part of that emotional scene?
It was such a dream working with Hannah.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say we were all very grateful for how brilliantly written the episode was by Michelle Paradise and how brilliantly directed it was by Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah.
So you really got to know this woman, this cybernetically augmented woman.
That's right.
In such a short amount of time. And I really appreciated it because I had not been able to work with her that closely before.
Right.
And she's such a beast. And honestly, just what she's able to do, what she was, everything she was able to bring, you know, she brought the full, you know, the totality of her life as Arium in that small period of time, just from top to bottom. I thought she did absolutely genius work. And so we were just in there. It was a bonding time. Mm-hmm. It was like sister warriors, like fighting together. We were in such support of each other. We had so much fun. We were sweating and
tears falling.
You know, tears were flying and sweat, and it was absolutely exhilarating.
Yeah.
But also extremely heartbreaking as well, because you know we got this glimpse of her, you know, her character, that is, and then knowing that she was going to be going, and then even just the sadness of losing Arium also.
I know.
So it was a complete experience, an all-encompassing experience, and I'm so grateful that I had it. We had a viewing party for episode 9. All of us were together, and it was a love and goodbye to Hannah. Mm-hmm. And then even a pseudo birthday party for James Frain, because his birthday was on the 14th.
Simultaneously.
So, yeah, so we did a lot of stuff all at once.
Sad.
But we were just yelling out, like, Hannah, you're incredible.
Oh, man. You guys really brought that to the entire scene, and it was truly felt. Like,
I really
felt that. But yeah, you mentioned that Jonathan Frakes directed.
Yes.
Does his Trek experience kind of bring emotional weight to important moments like that?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. He's one of our he's one of our favorite directors because he brings with him the context of Trek, right?
Yeah.
And so when we see him, when we're in a space with him in his presence, we go, wow, we're doing Star Trek. And he welcomed us from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And he sort of shepherds us in such a beautiful, almost paternal, you know, brotherly kind of way. You know, we can really trust him. He's a sort of like comforting place for us to land on.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's an actor's director as well. So
that's
obviously
true. He brings his own
and so all of his choices, you have this unspoken understanding between you, and you speak the same language.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's such a free space to work in with him.
Yeah. No, it seems like he really brought a whole other level and just continues to do that every episode he directs.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then he was also wowed by Hannah, you know, and
just
she gave so much that you had no choice but to respond to it. You know, Rachel, who obviously plays Nan, you know, she, you know, we were all raving.
Yeah. This week's episode was pretty integral too for Burnham's character because you know she has this difficult decision of having to bring about the Red Angel, and it's a tough thing to have to do. What does that say about Michael Burnham's character? The fact that she's willing to sacrifice her own life for the greater good, which she tends to do quite often.
True.
Yeah. So how does that say? Like, how does that speak to her character?
Oh man. I mean, it speaks completely to her character because it's a cornerstone of Michael Burnham. Right? Is this complete devotion to duty and to principle and to sacrifice. And you do see that with Michael Burnham from the very beginning, which is one of the things I respect the most about being Michael Burnham. But it really just, it speaks to this complete need to almost rewrite history. I've made a lot of mistakes as Michael.
Yeah.
I have certainly cost a lot of lives, all with great intentions. But I grew up on Vulcan, knowing that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. But then, as a human, I care about the few
and the ones that are close to you.
Absolutely. And so it's this constant. It's this constant balance. It's this constant fight to save everyone and to, you know, sort of right all these wrongs from the past and be absolved, but also do what I know needs to be done because I have given my life to this service.
Yeah. Oh, man. And we see it all the way throughout.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you do such a great job.
Thank you.
Another big moment that we got to see was that Leland is responsible for your parents' death, we find out. It's a big reveal.
Yes.
So how does Burnham deal with that fact? Now, does it affect her perception of the fact that, you know, she kind of had a role in her parents' death as well?
Oh, my goodness. So it affects my perception as Michael as much as I could, I can't even explain how much it affects my perspective, because so much of who I am, so much of my identity is unfortunately rooted in shame and guilt. Mm-hmm. Because that started from the very beginning. I always believed that I was responsible for my parents' death, yeah, because I asked them to stay those extra days to see the supernova. And then I was responsible for those Vulcan kids and teachers being killed when the Vulcan Learning Center was bombed by the extremists, the logic extremists. I was pseudo responsible for Georgiou. There's so many things I've been responsible for, obviously the Klingon War. And so to hear that the thing that started it all, the sort of inciting incident that began my entire sort of journey of guilt, did not happen that way.
Right.
That it actually wasn't because of me.
Yeah.
That it was because of what they were doing, and what they were doing under the behest of him, of Leland. It's basically like, the world you know isn't the world you know.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a big reveal. And I guess for you as well, as your character kind of incites a bit of rage or like anger to...
Because everything, like I said, it was the inciting incident. So if that had not happened, I would never have been on Vulcan. I would have been able to live a normal, normal life on Earth. I would not have had to assimilate to this other culture, which I appreciate the Vulcan upbringing, absolutely, but it was very difficult, and I wouldn't have had, the whole trajectory of my life would have been different if they had not been taken from me. And, you know, Alan's so amazing. He's such a beast as well. And so, you know, he's so gritty and, you know, and he really gets under your skin
because
he's so authentic as an actor. And so, you know, it was a wonderful, it was a wonderful moment. It was a very, it was very fulfilling as an actor because I felt, I felt all the feels.
Yes. And you were talking about, you know, his character just wanting to like hit him. You did get that moment.
I did get
you
that moment.
You got to punch him. So what was that like?
Well, it was cathartic.
It was cathartic, I'd imagine.
It was cathartic as Michael, but you know, you don't want to lean into your emotions too deeply in that way. So it's kind of the thing where you go, should I have punched him out? You know, like that when you leave. But I was overcome with my emotions. And this has obviously been a more emotional journey for Burnham in season two, because if you look at it almost like a pendulum swing, for so long I was on the side of being Vulcan, trying to get the approval of my father. And I realized halfway through season one that he had been lying to me my whole life. And so I realized, okay, I just need to be my own woman. And so what's happened is that I've sort of swung back to my humanity. And it's been like a sort of waterfall. Like if you put a top on a boiling pot of water, eventually it's going to boil over.
Right.
And that's essentially what's happening in season two, is that Michael Burnham is boiling over.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing. It's all sort of rushing out.
Coming out
all
of
the
her.
Emotion. Like so much. And so, you know, so if you wonder why is she so emotional, that's why. Because it was pent up for so long, and now it's bursting
out,
you know. And so in that way it felt good emotionally. It felt good to my ego to punch him out, because not only did he change the trajectory of my life, but he did it deceptively. This whole time he's been talking he's been talking to me in my face, you know, criticizing me, condescending to me, all the while knowing that he had been responsible for this.
You're talking about also this cathartic experience,
yes,
but, you know, also a relief of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge part of this. It's
absolutely
a huge part. And you actually, you know, have this relationship with Spock now that's being revealed to be more, you know, endearing.
Right.
And so talk about your relationship with Spock and how you guys are kind of warming up to each other as brother and sister.
Well, I love the fact that we are warming up to each other. Ethan, I'm just going to keep saying this. Ethan Peck is a beast. Everybody's a beast.
Everybody's a beast on this show.
Everybody, and I absolutely adore him, and we love working together, and it's so easy between us.
Yeah.
We were brother and sister so easily, so quickly, so organically, and we really, you know, we really motivate each other, and we energize each other in that way. We dive completely, we dive headfirst into the story together, and so I love that. And I love that, you know, from the beginning, when I couldn't say much about our relationship, I would just say it was complicated, and I would say we left no stone unturned.
Yeah.
And I love that you see this, and you see that we earn the warming up.
Yeah.
And what I love, he says in episode 9 in the chess, the infamous chess scene, he says, you know, you would rather shoulder blame, basically carry guilt rather than deal with the grief. And I love that knowing I wasn't responsible for my parents is the first opportunity that I get to let go of the guilt and shame and just feel the grief. And I thought that was such a profound thing, right? From our writer, and then just as a human being to hear that, that's quite true.
Yeah.
That a lot of times it's easier for us to take on guilt rather than grief.
Yeah.
And so I love that for the first time, that very first thing that happened in my life that turned everything to the left, I should say, I get to sort of sink into and just be sad about losing my parents and not feel that I was responsible. And I love that this moment between Burnham and Spock comes right on the tail, on the heels of that, and him finally forgiving me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
Him finally
such
forgiving
a weight off
me
your shoulders,
because
I'd
that
imagine.
Was yet another thing that I had been carrying shame for. Mm-hmm. Even though I was doing it to save his life, I thought it was what was best. I was 11. Mm-hmm. Still, I know that it broke him, and the way he came at me so furiously, when we first reunited, for him to let that, it was two huge points of guilt I got to let go.
I know, all in this episode.
All in this episode, I really appreciated it, and I love that is the beginning, that the beginning of us coming back together is forgiveness.
Yeah, and healing.
Like, absolutely,
you guys are
gonna be
so much
better
off
that.
Yes. After that. And I want to talk about another complicated relationship. You and Giorgio
have
had quite the... Yeah, this season's been a little, it's been complex.
Yeah.
Just put it that way. So how would you describe the evolution of your relationship, you two, just you and Giorgio?
Michelle Yeoh is a beast. Mm-hmm. And I and a legend, a living legend, and she's the most gracious woman you would ever meet. She's like, you're like, what? But I love how complicated Burnham and Giorgio are. Mm-hmm. Because from the very beginning, you have this mother-daughter, prime Giorgio.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful. It's built on love and respect and trust. And then it's ripped apart. But what I love about us now is that you have Mirror Giorgio, who raised me in the Mirror universe as her daughter. And then you have me in the prime universe.
Yeah.
We can't help but love each other. We understand that we are not the other's counterpart.
Right.
I am not the daughter you raised on the Mirror Universe. You are not my captain that came to be my mother in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But we can't help but love each other.
Have this understanding.
Exactly. Yeah. And obviously, it's full of conflict. Our relationship, it's strained. Mm-hmm. We wish the other would just stop fighting so hard. And, I want her to go my way. She wants me to go her way. But again, it's still built on love and respect.
Yeah.
The big problem is that there is no trust there. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes our relationship so... What do you call it? It's kind of like crackly.
Spiky.
It's spicy.
Spicy is a good way. Yeah, a good way to put it.
kind of like pop rocks.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's so tentative because we love and respect each other, even though that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. We don't actually know each other.
Yeah.
Mirror Giorgio and Prime Burnham, but we can't help it.
Yeah.
Right? There is something to be said about the soul.
Yeah.
And the soul being connected and the soul
That's
being
That's kind of
tied.
What I get a sense of. She still wants to help you.
Absolutely. I still love her and I still care what she thinks. Mm-hmm. And so I love that when we embark on this huge mission that is obviously going to be very sacrificial on my part because we have to capture this red angel. Mm-hmm. We realize that it's me. We think it's me.
Yeah.
And she loves me. And so she doesn't want to see me, and I love how she responds in that moment when I'm suffocating, when I'm dying, when we're going through with the plan, and she thinks that I want out, and she just can't take it anymore. I love the maternal instincts that
really
just come out.
Really good way to put it too. There's
exactly.
definitely a maternal bond there that you can instantly see when you guys are in the scene together.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
Another relationship that's complicated.
Yes.
There's a lot of complicated relationships in this show. But for you and Tyler to have that moment where you guys kiss.
Yes.
Very beautiful moment.
Thank you.
But for you, is that a rekindling of the romance or more like a friendship goodbye?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
It is complicated. With Tyler and Burnham, y'all. Ash and Michael just don't. Oh man.
Yeah.
I love working with Shahzad, who is a beast.
Awesome.
I love working with him because, again, we dive very deeply into the story together as well. There's a theme going on here, you guys.
A little bit.
We all kind of dive into the story together, I must say. head first, no inhibitions. But it's so complicated. There's almost a Romeo and Juliet aspect to it, right? Because there are always circumstantial issues. There are always things that are pulling them apart. Mm-hmm. They very clearly are almost magnetized where they
opposites
want
attract.
To, yes, and they want to come together. but too many things keep separating them. And from the very beginning, from the way that they sort of fell in love, it was quite quick, but there were a lot of heightened things going on, a lot of heightened circumstances. There was the mirror universe and having to survive in that, and obviously that sort of accelerates feelings and whatnot. But they, you know, I remember he said in season one, you know, you're my tether, you are what keeps me on the ground, mm-hmm. and they very much served each other in that way.
Yeah.
But then the betrayal, you know, at the time, me still thinking that my parents had been murdered by Klingons and that was because of me, and then he's a Klingon and I felt like I had disgraced my parents.
Oh my gosh.
Name and legacy. It was so complicated.
Yeah.
And now he's back and it's even more complicated. He had his son who had to be, you know, shipped off and everything. And so I don't know what the kiss is. I think it's many things. I think it's ambiguous. I think it's relief. I think it's the fact that they can't stay away from each other. Mm-hmm. They understand that the situation doesn't really, it's not really the best ground for them to build on.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't help but love each other.
Yeah.
And they can't fight it in that way. So even though all these things are keeping them apart, they keep coming back together.
Yeah.
And I think we're just going to see what happens, with that. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to say goodbye because it's what's best for them? Or are they going to get closer because it's what's best for them?
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very, very complicated. And there isn't an answer. And that's the truth about love.
That's true. I mean,
and relationships like that.
Peaks and valleys and roller coasters.
Yes, and confusion.
A lot of confusion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it's... And also, we really appreciated how we were directed. Hanalei Culpepper directed this episode, and shout out to her for mm-hmm. directing the pilot for Picard.
Another beast.
Absolutely.
Love
and
it.
And she's the first Black woman to ever direct a Trek pilot, so congratulations to her. And our writers as well, mm-hmm. Andrew Moranville. Andrew, is that how you pronounce
Nailed
your last
it.
Name?
Nailed
and Silvestri. Love that last name. But anyway, they did such a great job with this script, and Hanalei did such a great job writing it as well. Because we took the time for those moments.
Yeah.
And Hanalei gave us we love working with her, and she gave us the time in that scene
mm-hmm.
For us to feel it out. Mm-hmm. And I think you can tell
that
we were in a safe, open space. There's a lot of breath.
Yeah, there's been a few moments like that between you and Tyler mm-hmm. where you do have a moment to like step away, but
yeah,
still has got that complexity to it.
Yes.
Last question now. The last line of the entire episode is "Mom."
Right.
Can you share anything, or you know, do you care to comment about that last line?
Well, I will say Sonya Song. Guess what she is?
A beast.
A beast. we're thinking at this point that it's me.
Okay.
Obviously, that the Red Angel is me, and so that is a huge reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And coming right off the tail, or I keep saying the tail, coming off the heels. Can you say come off the tail?
Let's make it.
It's come
thing.
Off the. Yeah. Why let's not? Make it a thing.
Yeah.
Come off the tail.
The tail end.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. I think that's where it's pulling from. It's the tail end. Yeah.
For some reason, I just like it better than the heels. I don't know.
It works.
Right. Yeah. But of knowing that that Leland was responsible for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what reality is. Now, I've also just sort of died for a moment.
That's true.
Yeah, and had to be brought back. And so is it fantasy?
We don't know.
Is it a vision? Or is it real? We don't know. We don't know at this point. You know, when we're at near-death experiences, we've seen a lot where you see things.
A mirage of things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You see visions of people that have passed. You kind of daydream. You kind of leave your body in that way. So is it one of those outer-body visions, or is it real? We really can't know. We can't trust it.
Can't trust what we're seeing.
No.
All right. I'll leave it on that now.
Yes.
Well, Sonequa, it was so great chatting with you. You were so wonderful.
Thank you so
and,
much.
And
so
I hope to
you.
Have you back on the Red
I room. Hope so.
Yeah. thank you guys so much for joining us today. Episode 10 of Star Trek Discovery's new season is out right now. Be sure to check it out and tune in every Friday for more on the Ready Room. I'm Naomi Kyle, and this is Sonequa Martin-Green. As always, from our universe to yours, live long and prosper. Thank you.